We will be in the book of Habakkuk this morning. If you have a Bible and would turn there. Last week we looked at most of chapters 1 and chapters 2 of the book of Habakkuk, and this week we're going to look at the last three verses of that second chapter. So that is where we're going to land this morning. Have you ever been to a play or watched a play where one of the characters has an aside? You know, that moment when they kind of step out of character and they speak to the crowd. They speak to those in the audience. And sometimes when they do that, they tell you things as an audience that you need to know. The things that are important to the progression of the player, they give you some piece of information that you'll need for everything to make sense, but they do it kind of as a bit of extra information that the people on stage aren't supposed to know. Well, as I've read and studied the book of Habakkuk, especially the five woes that are found in chapter 2, beginning with verse 6, those five woes, what I've come to believe is that while God is speaking through Habakkuk prophecies that are kind of directed towards the Babylonians, he's speaking to the people of Judah and the people of Jerusalem through Habakkuk kind of like that aside, where he's telling them things that they need to know, things that are important to them that really are meant for other people. And I think that because of two things. First is that as Habakkuk gives the five woes, if you read the woes correctly and you read chapter 1 with Habakkuk's complaint about the people of Judah and Jerusalem, what you find is that, well, the five woes simply point back to some of the same things that Habakkuk was complaining about, and in doing so, showing that Judah and Jerusalem, especially the leadership of the people, they weren't as good as Habakkuk wanted to believe they were. And second is to show that God was going to deal with Judah and Jerusalem's sins in simply the same way he was going to deal with the sins of other people. The last of those woes is, well, God pronounces a woe against the sin of idolatry. G.K. Beale makes an argument in his book, We Become What We Worship, that the first sin of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden was the sin of idolatry. And to varying degrees, every sin that we commit is a sin of idolatry. This means that God, what God was warning would happen to the Babylonians, is what would happen to Judah because of her idolatry, and that it should serve as a warning to us 2,500 years later about the dangers of idolatry. Now, while we may not worship statues of people, of animals, and the universe, we are no less in danger of idolatry. And so this morning I want us to look at that last woe from the book of Habakkuk. Habakkuk chapter 2, beginning with verse 18, this is what Habakkuk writes. He says, of what value is an idol since man has carved it, or an image that teaches lies? For he who makes it trusts in his own creation. He makes idols that cannot speak. Woe to him who says to wood, come to life, or to lifeless stone, wake up. Can it give guidance? It is covered with gold and silver. There is no breath in it. But the Lord in his holy temple, The Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him. And so Habakkuk is writing and he's speaking to the people of Judah and Jerusalem and telling them about the folly of idolatry. And we're going to see a couple of things about the folly of idolatry this morning. But we're going to begin with the woe to, or the woe of, idolatry. And it begins by asking the question, or Habakkuk begins by answering the question, what is the value of idolatry? What is the value of idols to begin with? And he begins that first line, and he says that they're silver and gold. And he says, actually, he says they're covered in silver or gold. Kind of like you might put clothes on in the morning to cover yourself. They would cover their idols with silver. They would cover them with gold to make them more valuable. And the price of the materials, if you want to know what the value of an idol is, you simply say, what is the value of the materials that make up that idol? Some of them were simply made of wood. They would take a tree, they would carve a tree, and they would make an idol. Some of them, they would use stone. They would take stones and they would chisel and work at the stone to make an idol. And then, depending on the person, sometimes they would take the valuable materials, the silver, the gold, and they would overlay the wood or occasionally the stone. But Habakkuk is simply looking at the people and saying, an idol is nothing but a hunk of molded, shaped stuff. It's really of no value in and of itself. The value of an idol is what it's made out of or what it is covered in. And I found it interesting as I was studying this week, one of the things that we often miss is plays on words. As we do life, we sometimes have plays on words that we will simply use, say something and mean something totally different, but because of the words used, people know that. Sometimes we'll make things rhyme so that they are a little more memorable. And people have done this probably since the beginning of language, as we began to create words. And Habakkuk is no different. I want to show you a couple of words here. The first one is this one. Now, this word you probably don't recognize. It probably doesn't mean much to you. It is the word Elohim. Elohim, and if you've never heard that Hebrew word, it's okay. The word is Elohim. And it's a word that is used to mean of little or no value. It's a non-entity, a nobody. It's the word that Habakkuk uses when he is talking about the idols and what they're worth. He says that they are Elohim. Now, that that is important because of this word here. This word, if I say it, you probably recognize it. It's a word that if you've been in church for very long, you've probably heard once or twice. It is the word Elohim. It's the kind of the standard word for God that would be used throughout the ancient Near East, especially one that they were using frequently within the worship experiences of Israel, the word Elohim. And so what Habakkuk is doing is he's making fun of the people by the words that he chooses. They rhyme because they end in the same last couple of letters. You've got Elohim and Elohim. And Habakkuk is looking at the people, he's talking to the people, and he's saying, you think that this hunk of wood or this hunk of stone, this hunk of metal, it has some value. You think that it is your God, but let me tell you, instead of it being Elohim, it's Elohim. Instead of being God, it's nothing. The value of the idol is absolutely, positively nothing. Richard Lentz, in the book Identity and Idolatry, says this. He says, idols are dangerous in the same way that outside love interests are dangerous to marriage. Adulterous liaisons inevitably pull the marriage apart at the seams. As with adultery, so idolatry is about both wrong beliefs, a belief about where satisfaction is found, but more importantly, corrupted desires. The desire to get gratification on whatever terms necessary. Idolatry involves error in belief to some extent. If the belief in question is that some creature has a worth enjoyed only by the Creator. The value of an idol is nothing. And you know, in the days when Habakkuk was writing and speaking, idolatry was fairly easy to identify. You went out and you found the high place, and if on that high place there was a sacred tree, you know, hey, this is a place of worship. You went around the towns, and if you found a building with an idol inside, you'd say, hey, this is a temple where I worship whatever God. And you could look and you could say, these are the idols. Well, we don't tend, for the most part, in our culture, in our society, in our day and age, to worship idols in that sense of idolatry. But as I was studying, as I was reading, I was reminded of a couple of books that I had read years ago that deal with idolatry. And I began to look through some of them and just see what they were identifying as idolatry. I was reminded of another one that I thought about reading at one point in time, and I went back and looked at the index of it to see what the chapters were where the writer was talking about idolatry. And you know, what I found is that there are a lot of things that we have to be careful about becoming an idolatry in our day. I was thinking about this and thinking about some of them, and the statement went through my mind a couple of different times. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Now, we may look at those and say, well, that's just a statement, but it's a statement about worship. It's a statement about what we place value in. Now, that may be an older statement, 60s, 70s, somewhere, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. But I'm pretty sure that if we were to be honest, sex, drugs, and, well, entertainment, I'll change the last one, are still pretty big idols in the world that we live in today. There are some others that to varying degrees people deal with. We deal with relationships can become idolatrous. When people say, if I could just have a relationship with, or if I could just have a relationship like, if I could just, relationships can become idols that we worship. Money is a big one that we have to deal with. You see, the thing about idols is that it's not that they're not important. It's not that they can't be good things. It's the problem when we take a good thing and we make it an ultimate thing that it becomes idolatry. In our country today, the freedoms that we have can become idolatry, science, astrology. Someone from the outside probably correctly pointed to and said, guns, firearms in our country have a tendency to become idolatrous objects. And then if you study the New Testament and you look at where Jesus was interacting with people, I would say that, well, for them it was simply the Old Testament, but for us today, unfortunately, we have to be honest and say there can become an idolatry of the Bible. Where this book that is the Word of God that's meant to bring life becomes an object of worship rather than what it is supposed to be, and religious practices. Now that's just a short list, and it's anything but inclusive. I'm not even sure I would say that it's categorically inclusive. It's just simply a list of some things that I thought of as I was typing and thinking through idolatry this week. Things that can come in and take that place of God and who He is. The second question, or second part of that first question that Habakkuk asks or talks about, the woe to idolatry. He says, what is the value of idolatry? He answers that, but then he also answers the question, what is the wisdom of idolatry? That there has to be some reason, there has to be something besides just the value of something that makes us want to worship it. And the wisdom of idolatry is we take important things in life and we look at the pleasure or the necessity of them, and we think, oh, those are good things. And then we take that thought and we begin to give those things value greatly beyond what they are worth, and we make them an ultimate thing. And Habakkuk is looking at the people of Judah, the people of Jerusalem, and he says, well, he basically says that idolatry is stupid. That's what he says when he says Elohim. Not Elohim, but Elohim. Nothingness, worthless, valueless. He's saying it's stupid. And I wish that we could simply say this morning, idolatry is stupid, go home. But that's not how it works, unfortunately. Because G.K. Beale says this. He says, in essence, they were treating the true God as a false idol, and the truly false idols as the true God. It's an inversion of what's important, of what's of value. And, you know, if you dabble in the stock market, what do they say? Buy low and sell high. This would be like somebody giving you the opposite advice. Buy high and sell low. Doesn't make much sense, does it? You know, none of us hope that when we buy homes, none of us hope that later when we get ready to sell it that we'll lose lots of money on it, do we? But yet what Habakkuk is saying to the people is he's saying what you're doing is you're taking the true God who is of ultimate value and you're trading Him for a piece of junk, a trinket at the flea market that's mass-produced and is of zero value. He's saying the wisdom of idolatry is foolishness. And I said this, thinking through this, these were some notes on other things I was taking at the time, and I said this, I said, the more we desire control, the more comfortable we become. The more comfortable we become, the more self-serving we become. The more self-serving we become, the more self-absorbed we are. That's where idolatry takes us. It doesn't matter what the idol you're worshiping, this is where idolatry takes you. The other side of it is true too. The more that we seek God, the less self-absorbed we are. The less self-absorbed we are, the less self-serving we become. You want to know how you're doing in your relationship with God? Ask the question, how self-serving am I? Am I becoming less self-serving or more? It's a fairly good answer, a fairly good measuring tool. But then there's this, the less self-serving we are, the less we are concerned about comfort, and the more God can mold us into His image rather than the poor image of who we are supposed to be. Idolatry is so great that it makes us less than we are supposed to be. We become a poor image of who God created us to be. We become a poor image of what God wants from us and for us. Idolatry takes us deeper and deeper into self-absorption and self-service. I like the way the psalmist puts it in Psalm 115. Psalm 115 is a psalm of, it turns into a psalm of worship of God, but the first 8 verses are about the folly of idolatry. And in verse 8 of 115, the psalmist says this. He says, those who make them will be like them, and so will all who trust in them. The very premise behind the book title that G.K. Beale has, We Become What We Worship. You see, the more we worship these false gods, the more we look like them. Maybe not physically, but emotionally, spiritually. The desires of our hearts, the more we worship them, the more we look like them. And in fact, G.K. Beale again, he says this. He says, faith in idols is vain because nothing is behind the idol itself, except demons who use them to deceive. Part of the Old Testament judgment of idols is that they ironically reflect unspiritual and lifeless images of the idols. He's saying, basically, you become like what you worship, for good or for evil. You become like the object of your worship. And here's the problem with idolatry. In idolatry, we take the worst characteristics of man and we place them upon an object and say it's a god, and then we begin to worship it, and so we begin to live out and look like the worst characteristics of mankind. And the more and the longer we worship, the more entrenched those attitudes become. The second thing that Habakkuk talks about, he talks about the woe of idolatry, and then I'm quite certain that I probably created this word, Yahwehism. And if not, it's somebody with just as good an idea of life as I have. But I couldn't think of any better way to put this. It is the worship of Yahweh. You know, we have to be more specific than just saying the worship of God, because, well, when you worship an idol, you're saying that something is God other than Yahweh, the Creator Covenant God of Israel. And so we have to look at worshiping of Yahweh, and Habakkuk finishes the second chapter talking about who God is. And he says, let me tell you some things about God. Oh, he only gets 2 lines of the last verse, but He says, there are some things you need to know about Yahweh. And we could say this, that God is in heaven. Now, this distinguishes God from the idols. God is in heaven. He's not wherever a little statue of him is placed. In fact, Habakkuk is looking to the people of Judah and Jerusalem, and he's telling them something they probably didn't want to hear, because he's saying, hey, guess what? Yahweh isn't even really in Jerusalem. For generations, the people had worshipped God in Jerusalem, at the temple in Jerusalem. That's where they went to worship him. And while, yes, God said, I will be there in their midst, Habakkuk is looking at the people, and probably by the time he is writing to them, he's saying, God has kind of left, guys. If you didn't notice, things aren't quite the same down at the street at the temple. Ezekiel later would see a picture of God's spirit departing from the temple. And by all accounts, likely by the time Habakkuk is writing, God had really said, I'm not coming back here, guys. And he's also saying that God is not able to be carried. And one of the things about the idols that people would build, these statues and these representations of the gods, whatever they were movable. And if you picked up and you moved from point A to point B, you simply picked up the idol and it went with you. Some of them were national idols, and if you went to war, you simply picked up the idol and you took it with you. How many of you can carry and lift the God of Israel? The covenant God that we serve. None of us can. And Habakkuk is making this point about the value of the idol compared to the value of worshiping God. The idols can be carried. God can't. But as he's getting to that point, before he gets to the value, he talks about the people. Because the people would come in and they would worship the gods. And that they would come in and they would loudly and boisterously and without any sense of decorum, they would worship God, or their gods. And Habakkuk looks at the people and he says, you know what? The gods you worship are silent. When was the last time you walked in and you heard a block of wood speaking to you? When was the last time you went somewhere and a little piece of stone began to tell you what was going to happen? Today, that might go a little farther to say, well, you could, you know, and we have technology that they may not have had, and we can do things that they maybe couldn't. But the point that Habakkuk was making was the gods themselves, the idols, they don't speak to you. And instead, he says, when the people come in to worship the true God, it's not the gods that are silent, but it's the people who are silent before God. The people will come in and the people will be silent because they are in the presence of the holy and all-powerful God. And when they are there, God speaks. Habakkuk is making the point, making the point through Habakkuk, listen, I'm going to speak and I'm going to tell you some things. In fact, last week we looked, one of the verses says, I'm going to tell you some things you wouldn't believe even if you hear it. You're going to have to wait to see it to believe it, Habakkuk. But God said, I'm going to tell you what is going to happen and why it's going to happen. The other gods, they can't. But I will. And then Habakkuk gets to the value of God. If the idols are worthless, if they're Elohim, well then God is weighty and God is powerful and God is strong. Habakkuk is making a comparison and he's contrasting the idols that are worthless, though they may have some financial cost, they're really worthless and without value. And then he says, let me tell you about the God that we serve. He is a God who is truthfully worthy. He is not worthless. He is worthy. Worthy of our praise and our adoration. He's worthy of our honor and our glory. He is worthy of, well, he is worthy of our worship. And having God with us is invaluable. You cannot place a value on the God that we have been given the wonderful opportunity to worship and to serve. Because there is no value that can be placed upon him. And Habakkuk is looking at the people of Israel and he's saying, look, I understand that at the moment it may look like the Babylonians have it all together. And it may look like the gods that they worship and serve have some value. But let me tell you about the value of their gods. And let me tell you about the value of our God. And let me warn you about choosing the wrong one. I have to admit that as I was preparing for this sermon, I had to stop and ask myself some questions. Questions about activities. Questions about possessions. Questions about desires of my life. And to ask the question, what things can become idols to me? And then ask the question, how far along the path have I come to allowing them to become idols that I worship? And then what must I do? What must I do to put them in the proper perspective? And that last question, Habakkuk gets to the answer of that. And the thing is that it often seems too simple. It often seems too simple to look at the things that we put wrong emphasis on and say, here's the answer. It seems too simple. But often the reason that it seems too simple is because it is difficult in practice. And Habakkuk's answer and the answer of all of Scripture is the same. If you want to defeat the things that can become idols in your life, we do that through the proper worship of Yahweh. We do that through the proper worship of the Creator Covenant God of Israel and the worship of Him alone. That is the work. That is the work we all must do. And so this morning I ask that as we wrap up our time together, I would simply ask that you would pray. Pray as we sing this next song that God would show you. That God would show you either the idols in your lives or the things that can take that position in your life. And then turn your worship. You know, we used to sing a song. Turn your eyes upon Jesus and look full in His wonderful face. And the things of earth will become strangely dim in the light of His glorious grace. And we need to turn our eyes upon Jesus this morning. Let's do that as we stand together and sing.